Paisley, and I want to thank you again for joining us on our journey here in the spaces in between. We're being broadcast live again on Truth Frequency Radio, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, and TalkStream Live. If for some reason you're not able to hear the entire show tonight, I will be uploading content onto my YouTube channel. It's at the spaces between. So if you do go there, please make sure that you do hit the like and subscribe button for future shows. Kind of continuing on the journey of just starting out at the very, very beginning of what is paganism and what does it mean to be a witch in today's society. So some of the, we're going to talk about some of the witchy tools of the trade and what they're for and where they came from. So personally, I am a kitchen witch. So this means that I do most of my spells or rituals right smack dab in the kitchen. And as someone who's spent a lot of time in the broom closet and not really being out there, it's a really easy way to integrate my daily practice or my daily life right into my practice. You know, I'm cooking with intent. I focus on what I'm doing. If I'm fixing myself a cup of coffee or a cup of tea, you know, what's the intent that I'm putting into that thing, and how do I want it to benefit myself or others? So I use herbs and spices a lot to communicate my intention to the deities that I follow, and I hope that they are very receptive of my offerings and the way I revere my deities. And, you know, so regardless of what your path is, whether you're a kitchen witch or a hedge witch or not a witch at all, there are some common tools. Now, I do want to make a note, just to be really clear, and I'll probably say it again often, is you don't have to be a pagan to be a witch, and you don't have to be a witch to be a pagan. There are Christian witches, and there is often a lot of occult and witchcraft in other religious paths. If you ever wonder about that or why I say that with a lot of conviction, is look at the Hispanic tradition of the Day of the Dead. They're revering their dead, and they're it's very much a way of honoring the dead, and that to me is very much kind of a witchy thing, and they're very Christian in their belief generally. So please keep in mind that you do not have to be a witch to be a pagan, and you do not have to be a pagan to be a witch. You can be one or both; it doesn't matter. So some of those tools that are often used or are common no matter what path or tradition you have is the very, very first. It's the ritual knife. It's spelled A-T-H-A-M-E, and it is pronounced athame. Now, this is an old word, so that's why it sounds different than it looks. Hooked on Phonics is not going to help when you're getting into the traditions of paganism and witchcraft. It's just not, because those letters don't go together. So the athame, just like any other ritual tool that we're going to discuss tonight, is very, very personal to the practitioner. This means you may make it yourself. You might buy it from somewhere else and customize it. You may have someone custom make the knife for you. There's a lot of thought process. I mean, you're not just going to go grab a butter knife out of the drawer. There's some care that you need to take as you select your athame. And you should really, you know, think on it. Don't just go to the store, regardless of what store you're in, and say, oh, I'm going to buy this knife, and this is what I'm going to do because this is what I want, and by golly, this is all I'm going to be. Because it may not be the right knife for you. It may not be the right tool. So you should really feel a connection with your athame, and it should fit comfortably in your hand, and you should feel connected to it. Now, like I said, many people will personalize a commercially purchased knife. You may be by adorning it with runes or glyphs or sigils or oils, excuse me, to bond the knife to them. You know, or like I said, you may choose to make a knife. There's a lot of YouTube videos out there on how to make a knife. And just in general, as with any other tool, you may feel a closer connection to any handcrafted item. They don't have to be pretty. It just has to be functional, and you have to feel a connection to it. So the athame can be used to cast a circle. That's actually cutting or drawing a circle on the ground. You may be able to call the quarters or the elements to pay attention or to guide you and assist you in your ritual. It could just be as a part of an opening ritual, as like if you're doing something for the first day of spring, you know, the solstice rituals, you know, you may need to have use it as part of the opening part of the ritual. During hand fasting ceremonies where two people are joined in matrimony, I guess, if you will, but it's hand fasting, it's a little different. You may need an athame then, or an athame may be used during an initiation into a specific tradition. And it varies with the tradition that you're following and the people that you're working with. Now, the next one I want to talk about is a besom. That's B-E-S-O-M. And a besom is just another name for a broom. Now, a broom is generally used for cleaning your ritual area. Not just your house, but your ritual area. And just a random little factoid there. If someone says, oh, I just made a clean sweep of that, it's actually referencing cleansing a ritual area with a broom. It's just a very utilitarian tool that you can use for different rituals. Not just cleansing your ritual space, but also in like spring cleaning, as you're cleaning, you're actually sweeping the dirt out of your home. That could be a cleansing ritual of your home to rid yourself of the negative energies that may have, you know, hibernated in your house over the winter. In a hand fasting, for instance, a couple may choose to jump over the broom, and jumping over the broom has been used as a tradition for hand fasting for a long time. Now, just be aware that you jump over the broom if you want children, because the combination of the brush and the handle are a very, very powerful symbol of fertility. So if you do not want children, don't jump over the broom. You do want children, by golly, jump all you want. Now, brooms can also be left brushy side up near a door or entryway to protect your home from unwanted outside energies. So if you're feeling like you're vulnerable to some sort of attack from a negative spirit or a negative malevolent force or something, you know, leave a broom, a bristle side up near your door. There's also a tradition of when you move, you don't take the broom. You leave the broom in your home for the next tenant. It's to the continuity of care of a home. The next thing to talk about is a bell. So bells, you hear them everywhere. They have a variety of tones. They're different shapes. They're different sizes. They're made out of everything from metal to glass. I mean, they're just everywhere. And the bell is believed to be a symbol of creative power. The shape itself is a symbol of the feminine element. And there really isn't a right or wrong way to use a bell. You know, it could be used to ward off negative energies, or it could be used to welcome positive ones. Regardless of you know, the bell, it's a tool really based on your intuition and how you want to use it. Now, as I'm sure you've seen in many countless homes all over the world, there are wind chimes, either at the entrance of a home or at the front of a window or inside or outside, and that those bells are just a way, or those tones from the bells are a way of protecting the home from unwanted energies and drawing positive energies to you. And it's just a really simple, clean, and often beautiful noise that you hear in your day-to-day life that everybody's using that originated in the witchcraft tradition or the pagan tradition. I personally, when I'm doing a ritual that I'm very formal about, I have a bell that I've had in my family for a very long time that I will just ding to draw attention from the deity to what I'm doing. So last week I did talk about cauldrons and why they're connected to witches a little bit. But as you know, the cauldron next to the broom is probably one of the most common symbols that are associated with witchcraft. I mean, you Google or look up a witches, you're going to find pictures with women often dressed oddly with a broom and a big steaming pot of something. And so there's just the cauldron was a large pot that folks used to cook with. So they were in everyday life. Today, though, cauldrons are used in all the different traditions, and they often have separate meanings according to the tradition. For instance, in some of the older Celtic traditions, the cauldron is associated with the concept of reincarnation and the cycle of birth, death, and rebirth. So it's, you know, a fundamental part of their tradition. In others, the cauldron can represent water. It can, you know, hold water to scry or to as an offering to a deity or a spirit guide. Or it could represent fire because you're either going to put a fire under it or put a fire in it. And even for some small rituals, a small fire can be lit within the cauldron itself so that you can burn incense or herbs for your spells or for your rituals. The next one to talk about is the chalice. Now the chalice is generally seen on an altar and is definitely the female aspect. Excuse me. And it's often associated with the element of water. And if it's on an altar, it'll generally hold some sort of offering for the deities. For the ancestors, and it may hold like moon water or wine or some other libation that you associate with them, for instance. Now, chalices, just like bells, can be made out of almost any material. They could be glass, they could be clay, porcelain, copper, steel, iron, any of those things. Generally, they're lighter, though, because they're small. And some practitioners do have several different types of cauldrons for different rituals. A larger community ritual may require a larger cauldron, or a small personal ritual may require a small cauldron. Or if you need the traits that are associated with a particular type of metal, you may want a slightly different cauldron chalice for those, for that working. And just a real note of caution, though, if you have an untreated metal, such as pewter, for instance, and you're putting wine in it, just be real cautious, because there's a good way to poison yourself, and we don't want that. The next item that's also very commonly associated with paganism or witchcraft is the five-pointed star within the circle. It's generally inscribed in wood or metal, and is regularly seen on the altar, and it can be used as a focal point for rituals or meditation, or for consecrating your tools, like your athame or your chalice that you've purchased elsewhere. Now, in earlier times, when witchcraft and paganism were not as socially acceptable as they are today, that pentacle may have been made with a cloth or paper, so they could be burned to prevent discovery in the time of the trials. Another item that is commonly associated with paganism is the staff. Now, the staff can be used to mark the quarter points. It might be used to hold a flag or a banner that represents the elements. Generally, though, the staff has similar characteristics to a wand, and it should be specific to the user, and it should reach about shoulder height. Because if it's any bigger, you're going to run the risk of knocking yourself in the head or tripping over it or hurting someone. And who wants that? I mean, unless you're going out there really just to beat someone with a staff, keep it smaller is better in this case. So moving on, the wand, very similar to the staff, though. It does represent air and the male aspect of East. A wand can be purchased ready-made, or you can make your own. Either way, you know, whatever is going to call to you. Now, if you're going to make your own, you know, I would recommend using like a downed branch or purchasing something. If that's not possible and you go and harvest your own wood to make a wand, just make sure you ask the tree that you're harvesting from for permission and leave an offering of some sort to make sure that so the tree knows that you're honoring them and you're requesting the traits and the abilities of the wood and it's in a beneficial way rather, in a mutually beneficial way, excuse me. Now, please know that before you select any specific type of wood, do your research, we'll talk about it later, about the inherent properties of wood, because not all of them are gonna match all practitioners. And you don't want the same traits or characteristics or properties of one specific wood for all things. This, you know, if anybody's watched any of the Harry Potter movies and Harry is going and selecting his wand and his hair flies and all that stuff, that's really the foundation of choosing the right wood for your wand, you know, sparked that that idea or that scene. And it's true, though. If you don't feel bonded or a connection to the wood, it's not going to be a good wand for you, and your ritual work is not going to be as good. You're going to have problems, or there's potential for inadvertent harm happening. Something else that is often used is a thurible or an incense burner, and it's usually a metal or pottery-type container to burn incense, and a hot coal is put inside of the incense burner, and then herbs or oils or incense are sprinkled on top and they burn, either during a ritual or just in your general cleansing that you might need. So the incense smoke itself does represent air, but the coal would represent the fire. So it's kind of a two-for-one tool, if you will. The really awesome thing about using an incense burner is the combination of fire and air are very often used to purify your tools or your ritual area. So if you're feeling a lot of negative energy, just like if you're going to burn smudge, you can use the incense burner. You know, go through your home and you do the walkthrough and the practice and to remove the negative energy from your home. Now, the next thing is the sword. Everybody loves a sword, right? And it's traditionally not as popular a tool with most practitioners, but with the neo-pagan or the neo-Celtic traditions, the sword is really becoming a much more popular tool. It can be used very similarly to an athame, but a lot of groups are going to limit the priest or priestess to being the only one with the sword, and this is really just to protect everyone around them and prevent accidental mayhem. Because if you've got a 5-foot sword and you want to, you know, swing it around, and you don't understand what you're doing, it's a good way to hurt someone or yourself. The sword can also be used to the call the points or draw a circle. And so just think of it as a really big athame. Really big. But again, you should have a connection to your tools. Not all tools are going to be right. Maybe someone's going to gift you something, and that's fine. But if it doesn't feel right to you or you don't feel a connection to it, don't use it. It won't make your working or your practice as smooth and as beneficial as you want it to be. So something I do want to just mention, because I know a lot of people are going to go to online to search, you know, what should my altar look like? What should my tools look like? What do I really need? And you're going to see a lot of great pictures on Pinterest or Facebook or other social media sites, and you're going to be just overwhelmed with what everybody is putting in there. You don't have to spend that much. I mean, if you go garage sailing or thrift storing or just grabbing some stuff out of your cupboard that you want to make or use specifically for your rituals or your altar, that's fine. You know, you don't have to invest a lot of money. Traditionally, pagans and witches have not been wealthy, and we've had to make do. So if you have a specific budget that you need to stay in, by all means, do it. It's more important that you feel a connection to the tools that you have. And so if you have a cracked teacup for a chalice, use it. An old rusty pot for a cauldron, yep, you've got it. If it's a paring knife that your grandma had and that you just don't want to use to peel potatoes anymore because it's all worn out, fine. That's perfect. Just make sure you've cleansed your tools, especially if you get them secondhand, and keep that intention clear as you use them moving forward. If you just grab that paring knife out of the kitchen to use as your athame and you haven't really prepped yourself, it may be sharp and you may cut yourself, and that's bad, and you don't want to go to the emergency room because it's expensive and that kind of defeats the purpose. We want to spend our money on our toys and our tools rather than going to the ER. I'm sure if you ever look online, you're going to see a lot of folks out there who buy at the dollar store candles and such. It's a great place. So just look for sales. They're everywhere. It looks like Black Tree had a really quick question about altars in general, and do you need them to be a good witch? In reality, no, you don't. It's just a way of focusing yourself and your ritual work, and you may not need it. You may have one in your mind that's better. If you ever go to your happy place in your mind, that could be your altar. Or if you have you go on hikes or walks and you have a favorite place that you like to go, where you just want to sit and be one with nature or feel the sun on your face, you know, that could be your altar. You don't have to have the traditional, I've got a pedestal with an altar cloth and I've got all the tools, I've got the chalice, the athame, the candles, and the crystals, and the stones, and everything else. You don't have to have those to be a good witch or a good pagan. And to be honest, people who do have all those things may not be a good witch or a good pagan. So it's really goes back to your intent. What is your intent on your path of being a pagan or being a witch? That to me, and my interpretation, is significantly more important than the money that you may invest in the tools that are generally associated with being a pagan. If you need a wand and you don't have one, pick up a stick, use your finger, you know, any of those things, you know, to gesture. It's really, to me, or my interpretation, like I said, is more regarding your intent. So if you intend to be a good witch and to revere the your spirit guardians or your totem or your familiar, you know, revere them. Don't worship them, but revere them and thank them often, you know, and have your intentions set when you do your work. That is so much more important than having the latest and greatest or the shiniest tools possible. Looks like we are running out of time for the evening, and I cannot believe how fast an hour goes. Wow, holy crow. I do want to thank Chris and Cherie for giving me the opportunity to drag you all on my journey here on the spaces between. And I want to thank you for joining me tonight. And if you do have any future or ideas for future shows or that you'd like to share, again, please email me at wildpaisley@gmail.com. That's wild, W-I-L-D-E. PAISLEY@gmail.com.